I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. The average consumer is expected to spend $702 on holiday purchases this year, up 4.5% from last year. Holiday shopping accounts for about one quarter of the retail industry's sales in any given year, and Friday's take of the cash register will be closely watched by economists. Well, joining us on the line from New York is Gretchen Morgenson, Wall Street columnist for The New York Times. And Gretchen, what are your thoughts about consumer spending this coming holiday season, and what does it mean?
Well, we've seen a lot of very good numbers coming out from the consumer, and it looks to be a continuation of where we've been really over the last, 5 years, almost a decade, where the consumer has been bailing out the economy. And it is unfortunate but true that they're leveraging themselves or borrowing to do this kind of spending. So it's really not good news, or let's just say that it's a good news with a double-edged sword to it. If the consumer were to stop spending, the economy would be in much worse condition than it is. So that's a good thing, but the bad thing is that they are really increasing their debt loads to do it.
Sort of like the country.
Exactly.
Right. Well, President Bush has been saying that the economy is improving, but some economic numbers came out today. Demand for durable goods fell 0.4%. Those are the expensive manufactured goods, you know, such as appliances. So
right.
What does that mean?
Well, that is unfortunately bad news, and I'll tell you why. Capital spending on these kinds of goods is really key to the economy coming back in any meaningful way. And this is the bookings for the non-defense capital goods really declined. They fell 3.6% in the period, and that's the first decline that we've seen in 5 months. And so this is a genuine indication that the kind of big ticket items that companies are spending on have really, really declined.
Let's touch on unemployment claims. Initial unemployment claims fell to a three-month low last week. That was a drop of 12,000 in first-time unemployment claims. Is that good news?
That is good news. It certainly is the lowest since early September, which indicates that the labor market might be showing a little bit of strength. That would certainly help allay some of the fears about the consumer's debt levels.
Well, getting back to debt, as we seem to keep coming back to debt, this week Federal Reserve Chair Alan Greenspan warned of what he called the twin deficits, the record federal deficit, and the United States trade deficit with the rest of the world, the U.S. economy running on borrowed money.
Mm-hmm.
What does the twin federal deficit mean for Americans?
It really means that we are living based on the kindness of strangers, to quote from Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire. As long as the foreign investors community, like the Japanese central banks, Chinese, European central banks, as long as they continue to buy our treasury securities, then we're fine. But the moment that they stop making those purchases, and they are significant, significant holdings already, then we get into the downturn or the cyclical spiral downwards, and that is an increasing interest rate scenario and very inflationary. And we know what that means. That is not good for the stock market, certainly not good for the economy.
Right. Gretchen, anything else the consumer should know about as we head into this big spending season?
Well, I guess the advice would be just to be careful and cautious about the amount of debt that you take on, particularly given that credit card companies are now able to ratchet up their interest rates that they charge to you at the drop of a hat without really even notifying you.
And Gretchen, remind us, how recent is this and how did this happen?
What happened was the credit card companies have decided that if you take on too much debt, even if it's somewhere else, you know, at another company or a new mortgage or something, that would change your risk. And so, therefore, they are allowed to up your interest rate.
And Gretchen, by the way, this interest increase on your credit card, do you know about it?
Oh, yes, it would show up on your statement, but I think that a lot of people do not realize that it can change and they should be on the lookout for it.
Gretchen Morgenson, Wall Street columnist for The New York Times, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Well, credit cards are also an issue for American soldiers. In a moment, we're going to look into the financial life of troops overseas. But first, what are they buying on credit? The Army Air Force Exchange Service runs 29 PXs in Iraq with 1,200 civilian employees. The PXs range from small shops in Mosul to a store in Baghdad so big the soldiers have nicknamed it Walmart. Its official name is Victory North, and joining us from his cell phone out front is store manager Robin Chetry. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just how big is Victory North?
Okay, Victory North, it's about 30,000 square feet. It's two tent structures. On average, we go through roughly 4,000 customers a day. You know, that's between 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night.
Well, what does it look like? Does it have, you know, aisles like a Walmart? What does it look like inside?
It looks just like a PX back home. Outside, it looks like a tent, but when you walk inside, it's just like any other PX, you know, back stateside with, you know, tiled floors and drop ceiling, you know, just like a regular store. It's just like being back home. It's a taste of home for them.
Except, of course, you know, most homes here in the U.S. don't have an Arab bazaar. Do I understand you have one there?
There's a bazaar tent outside. It's a tent. It's run by the local nationals, you know, by the Iraqis. You know, it's souvenir stuff. You know, it's in the PX complex, but it's outside.
What are the soldiers picking up there?
You know, they have really nice paintings on leathers, for instance. That's very unique to this area. You know, a lot of gift items, I guess, to send back home.
Yeah. I'm wondering, just before we move on to what they buy in the USPX, is that a security concern, you know, U.S. soldiers going into an Arab bazaar?
No, not at all, because everything is monitored by our forces.
Yeah. How do families interact with the PX? Can a family order something for a soldier through the PX?
Absolutely. We have a couple of programs geared for that. We have what we call the gifts from the home front, and we have Operation Portal Santa, and we have everything for every family member, you know, kids, wives, moms, dads. And what they do is they fill out the form, they can drop it off at the PX, and we take care of it for, you know, for them.
We've gone to your website, and I'm seeing your Operation Forward Santa, where soldiers can send things out to family. I see a tricycle for $12.95. That's a great price.
Yes, it is. And you know something on all our orders, whether it's catalog, whether it's Operation Forward Santa, everything is free shipping and handling.
So, Robin, can I ask you? I know you're right outside the PX. Do you mind going inside? Let's see if we could hear what's going on in there.
No, not at all. Not at all. So just, you know, bear with me. I'm going to walk in.
Okay.
If the line drops, you'll know.
Right.
You know, I lost you over there.
Boy, I'm seeing they can buy microwaves.
We do sell microwaves to heat the little, you know, gourmet meals we sell. You know, little TV dinners.
Camcorders.
Yes, camcorders too. Okay, I'm going through the store now. We have 12 registers going. And you know, a lot of the stuff that we sell here are special ops stuff. You know, thing for their guns and stuff like that.
Infrared goggles.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, camelbacks, which is you know, a backpack with a water pouch in the back.
Is it possible for you to pass the phone over to a soldier?
Sure, I can. Okay, hold on one second. This
sure.
Is a lady backstage. Would you like to? She just wants to talk to a soldier. Hello?
Hello, who's this?
PFC Ortiz.
Hi, we're calling from public radio. We're based in Boston, and we're just wondering, first of all, what are you buying at the PX today?
Nothing right now because my credit card was declined for some odd reason. We just got paid on the 15th, too, so I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I got a buddy of mine who just gave me a calling card and is going to go call the bank.
Oh, boy. Well, we understand that sometimes finances can get tough over there, long distance.
I'm finding out right now. I'm from San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
I'm regular Army, but I got assigned to a National Guard unit out of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me this. What did you want to get? What are the things from home that when your credit card gets going, the PX will provide for you?
Me, personally, I just need the basic things. Personal hygiene and, I guess, a way to get in touch with home.
Calling card?
I mean, people get DVD players. That's, you know, sense of getting electronics. But people go ahead and get laptops and all these things. I don't see any logic in that.
We're going to let you go to settle your credit card question. Thank you so much, Soldier.
Okay, ma'am.
And hand me back to Robin.
Okay, how did it go?
Well, you have some other customers there. Can we talk to one?
Absolutely. He's right here. Hold on, please.
Hello.
Hello, Soldier. This is Public Radio based in Boston. What's your name?
Based in Boston, huh?
Boston. Hey, don't make fun of us. We have a world champion baseball team.
Okay, you're right. Okay, what you got?
Where are you from?
I'm from Houston, Texas.
And what's your name?
But I'm stationed at Fort Drum, upstate New York.
And what's your name?
Daniel Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S.
What does the PX do for you? What's the benefit of the PX? How would you explain it to somebody who's never been to one?
For someone that's never been to one, if you're on a deployment, and, I mean, it's something that really comes in handy. This is my third deployment. I was in Kosovo, Afghanistan, and now Iraq. And it seems that as time has gone on, the PX is just getting a little bit better and better. They provide more things for the soldiers.
What are some of the things that a soldier needs, and you're away from home, and a foreign country just doesn't have the same kind of thing?
Well, I mean, at a PX, you're anything basic from shaving equipment to snacks to clothes to all the way up to computers and TVs.
Have you gotten a computer or a TV?
I have not, but I have several friends that have.
Where do you put a TV? Aren't you some of you in tents and?
Actually, we're in some really, really small trailers, and you just got to learn how to stack your stuff.
Well, Daniel, thank you very much.
All righty.
I understand you're with someone there.
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
This is Brian Rhodes.
And Brian, Army?
Yes, ma'am.
And where are you from?
I'm from Henderson, Tennessee, ma'am.
Henderson, Tennessee. Can you just throw out some of the items that you've bought?
I just walked out of the store and I got some Ocean Spray cranberry juice, and then you are also selling some Tyson chicken that's is prepackaged. That's pretty good.
By the way, Brian, you say you're from Tennessee. Anything you want to say to your family? We're coming up on Thanksgiving.
I just wanted to say I miss them, I love them, and I'm sorry I couldn't be there, but I got a more important job to do over here.
Brian, thank you very much.
Okay, you have a good day, ma'am.
You too.
Hello.
Well, Robin, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Robin Chetri is store manager of Victory North, the largest of 6 PXs in Baghdad. Robin, thank you.
You're very welcome, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Well, when we come back, we're going to speak with a sociologist who says that credit cards, cell phones, laptops, satellite TVs are now a part of life at war, and they bring benefits and also costs. Stay with us. There's more ahead here and now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. Reports show that soldiers are often much sought after by credit card companies here in the U.S. Young men in particular are popular consumers. And we just heard some soldiers lining up and using or trying to use their cards at a PX in Baghdad. What are some of the new financial realities for troops? We're joined now by Morten Ender. He's a professor of sociology at the United States Military Academy, known to most of us as West Point. Welcome, Professor Ender.
Thank you.
And as we just heard, the good news is there's a lot of things for soldiers overseas to buy, laptops, large TVs. The bad news is there's a lot of things for soldiers overseas to buy. You spent the summer surveying 1,000 or so soldiers and their families on a lot of issues, including how they spend their money. What was your overarching find? What'd you find?
Well, the overarching finding is that soldiers are just like their civilian counterparts, and they're consumers. They like to buy stuff.
We just heard from a soldier at the PX in Baghdad who was standing online at the register, and his credit card didn't work. Now, we don't know why. It might just have been a technical glitch, or it could be that it's not paid up. These kinds of problems with, again, young people shopping and having to call banks, a continent away. Do you come across that often?
That's a major issue for young soldiers. For many of them, it's their first paid job where they have to start checking accounts and they're getting credit cards available to them, not unlike college students that get credit cards for the first time. For the military, it's slightly different because many creditors will contact commanding officers and put pressure on soldiers that way, whereas if I had a credit problem, no one would contact my boss. Or if you were in mm-hmm. trouble financially, no one would contact necessarily your boss. So it's different for soldiers.
Right. Well, in fact, we spoke recently to a wounded soldier who is now back in the States, but he did mention that a lot of his friends had bills piling up at home, that things just got out of control. Why would being deployed lead to more financial troubles outside of, you know, shopping sprees at the PX?
Well, keep in mind, a lot of these soldiers are deployed and away from home for the first time. That transition is oftentimes stressful for people. So during any transition, and your listeners can think about any time that they've moved in their life, when you move, you have to sort of reestablish yourself. You start buying things. You need to get into a routine. They may even be setting up, in some cases, two new households. They're setting up their new household with their family back in the States, and now they're setting up somewhat of a household in Iraq for themselves.
Such as it is. And how does new technology increase the debt? I'm thinking of cell phones in particular, and I know you spoke to one spouse who said that, you know, there's a $40 phone call every other day.
Yeah, I mean, that's expensive. The cell phones are becoming available to them in different kinds of ways, as well as satellite dishes and Roadrunner internet access. Those devices are expensive. They can quickly eat into a young soldier's salary.
These soldiers have satellite dishes?
There are many satellite dishes on the bases in Iraq.
Yeah, but do soldiers have personal dishes, you know, on their little hooch?
Yes.
They do?
Yes.
Hmm. Do they get those at the PX?
I believe they can be purchased in Baghdad. I don't think they're available in the PX. I didn't see any in the PX.
Well, Morton Enders, how does that impact a soldier? If, in fact, a soldier is getting a lot of news from different sources than the military?
Well, that's been an ongoing issue that I've been writing about for a number of years. Essentially, what you have now with technological devices is you're putting real-time home front into real-time war front, and you're putting real-time war front into real-time home front.
How is that real-time home front exchange impacting the families back on the domestic side?
Well, we had the opportunity to interview a number of wives in particular who were experiencing the war live while their husbands were obviously forward deployed, and they're watching them on CNN through embeds. And that's profound. In a couple of cases, wives told us that they would leave CNN on or Fox News on or MSNBC, depending on what station had the embedded reporter with their husband, and they'd leave it on 24/7, and they could actually wake up to the sound of the reporter's voice because that indicated to them that they might be able to see their husband. That could disrupt sleep patterns. That can create all kinds of stresses. That could create problems when, you know, they didn't see their husband and they expected to see them, and that creates questions on where is he? I thought he was with this unit. How come I don't see him?
Yeah. What are your findings show, Professor Ender? Is there consideration of sort of stopping some of these new advances that are changing the life of a soldier, or is that even possible?
Well, I would never recommend censoring or stopping. I mean, soldiers want this. They expect this. And it's the American way. I think what we need to do a better job at, perhaps, is my mantra that I use with the military is educate to self-regulate.
Well, Morton Ender, you know, for those of us here stateside who find increasingly we have email we have to answer and we have faxes, you can't stop information from assaulting you. I'm wondering if, in fact, that increase in information flow, as opposed to, you know, sitting back and writing out a letter and everything that that brings, I'm wondering if this is sometimes more stressful for soldiers, or overall, is this better for soldiers?
Well, soldiers will tell you that it's better. They want these things available to them. I mean, there's certainly something powerful about a letter The person that writes it generally contemplates more when they write it. They think through what they want to say. When you send it to a soldier, he can stick it in his pocket and hold on to it. It has meaning. You can't do that with an email. Mm. Emails are more impulsive. They're real time in many ways because now soldiers have gone to IM. So, again,
IM?
Instant messaging. Mm-hmm. Instant messaging, right. So in many ways, I think we need to educate people about what is it that's being communicated through the device, and for people to think through, what message am I trying to get across? What kind of device is the best way to get that message across?
Morton Ender is a professor of sociology at West Point. Morton, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead, including your thoughts on creationism. That's coming up here and now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. This Thanksgiving is expected to have the most travelers post 9/11, and they will face more frequent and more invasive security inspections at airports. Under new procedures put in place by the Transportation Security Administration, screeners now have to touch any part of the body that sets off a metal detecting wand, and both men and women are subject to these new measures. To tell us more, we have Boston Globe reporter Anthony Flint. And tell us, first of all, some of the reasons that these new measures were put in place.
These new procedures started in mid-September, and they actually came from some 9/11 Commission recommendations, and they also follow the mid-air explosions of the Russian airliners earlier that month, where there were female terrorists who brought explosives on board. The 9/11 Commission basically told the TSA they need to get better at more thoroughly inspecting people for explosives on their person.
So now we have these new, more invasive pat-downs. Women have been complaining. What are they saying?
Well, both men and women are subjected to this, but women have been relating tales of embarrassment and feeling like it was a bit much or a little intrusive when they are pulled over to the side in what's called a secondary screening.
It's a groping in some cases, they say.
That is what some have related. Now, the screeners, they're all supposed to be women, by the way, who screen women, mm-hmm. and men screen men, but the screeners are supposed to use the back of the hand when they're touching people's torso.
So a sensitive area should have the back of the hand. That's one thing you should be aware of. But I guess the TSA is also telling passengers not to wear so much bulky clothing and call attention to themselves.
That's right, and they're also asking their screeners to do a lot of talking and to tell the passengers what they're doing and ask them, do you have body piercing? Perhaps that's setting off the wand, and what kind of bra they're wearing, because the wires in bras apparently can also set off the wand.
And we should say that thousands of people have been going through the new pat-down with no complaints. So.
That's right, 35,000 just at Logan Airport here in Boston yesterday, and many, many thousands more. And many women said that they actually didn't mind, that it was all in the interests of security.
Yeah. Anthony Flint, thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Anthony Flint reports for the Boston Globe. Well, after all the travelers are in place, dinner over, the shopping begins. It's a day known as Black Friday, when retailers hope to get into the black financially, and the unofficial start of the holiday shopping season begins. Edward Dworsky is a longtime consumer advocate. He knows a bargain when he sees one. He runs the website consumerworld.org. He's also a former assistant attorney general in the Consumer Protection Division of the Massachusetts Attorney General's Office. Well, here and now's Bob Oakes spoke recently with Edgar for some tips on getting the most out of your post-Thanksgiving Day shopping experience.
You say, Edgar, that consumers need to rely a little bit more on their brains when they head to the mall. What do you mean by that, and what are the most common mistakes that shoppers make?
Well, basically, if you're looking at sale ads, you may be attracted by the low price. That's fine. Everybody loves a bargain. But it's only a bargain for real if you're buying the right item, that it's not a piece of junk at a good price, and that it's worth the money, you know, that that really is a low price. So, you know, we certainly recommend do your homework before you go shopping. Go on the internet, for example. Take a look at one of the shopping robots. Consumer World itself has a price checker in there, shopping.com, Price Grabber. And these are wonderful devices for the lazy consumer. Put in a model number of something you're thinking of buying, and it will spit back a list of what that particular item is selling for at a variety of online stores.
However, when you go to the internet, do many people get bogged down with lengthy searches? I mean, I know that I do sometimes. Some searches seem just endless.
Well, if you're going into Google, for example, and just putting a model number in, you're going to get, you know, 20,000 different links there. You'll go crazy. You have to really tailor your search. First, you may want to do a price search, see what that item sells for using the shopping robots that I just talked about. But then secondly, figure out what sites have reviews. I personally also like going to places like Amazon.com or opinions where real users of the product tell you what they think of it.
Give us some examples, if you would, of what you call triple plays.
Triple plays is kind of the best way to save. You know, it's not enough just to find the low price anymore. So here's what a triple play is. Look for an item at not just a good price, but a great price. See if there's a coupon. Maybe on the internet there'll be a $5 off of $20 purchase coupon, or at one of the local stores, you know, on Black Friday, it'll be 15 and 20% off, so you have a good price. Then you have a coupon to take another 10, 20% off. And then if the product comes with a rebate, that's absolutely sensational, much less than full retail.
I know that you're enthused about early bird or doorbuster sales. I actually have a flyer here in front of me from a local computer retailer. We're not going to mention the name, but it's their holiday kickoff, they say, on the front page. And it's got a lot of interesting items on here, a lot of presumably good prices and free software after the savings and the rebates. Is this what you're talking about?
One of the early bird specials tends to be free things after rebate. One of the big office supply stores is giving away a whole bunch of free things, a little thumb drive that you can kind of carry your hard drive in your pocket practically, a digital card for your camera, a label maker. All that stuff is free after rebate. You can't beat that.
Are early bird sales, though, the doorbuster sales, often overhyped? And I would think that some people are listening to us talk about that and saying, you know, I don't want to do that. That's too grueling.
Well, there are a lot of people who don't want to get up. You know, after a big Thanksgiving dinner on Thursday, who wants to get up at 5 in the morning to go wait outside a retail store? There are many people who do. The early bird specials, the doorbusters, if you will, those tend to be the lowest prices that are being offered for those particular products. Again, you know, do your research to make sure, but it's part of the fun of the Friday after Thanksgiving. Part of it's getting the bargain, but part of it is this frenzy that you become a part of.
I'm wondering what you tell people who do their holiday shopping because it's something that they have to do. It's not something that they really want to do.
A lot of people don't get enjoyment from shopping. But if you're buying on Black Friday sale items, generally speaking, you'll do better. If you think of all the sales during the year, retail stores have sales every week now. They're not too, you know, special anymore. Friday after Thanksgiving. That is the one true special bargain day. So just buying that day alone will help ensure you're getting a good price.
Have you started your holiday shopping yet?
I've started taking notes. I'm beginning to plan my route. You know, on Friday, if you want to get to these doorbusters, you got to figure out store A opens at 5:30, store B opens at 6. You got to go on MapQuest and figure out how you're going to get them all in.
Don't get in his way on Friday. Edgar, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you, Bob.
Edgar Dworsky is an experienced bargain hunter and the founder of ConsumerWorld.org. He spoke with Here Now's Bob Oakes. Well, still to come, your thoughts on creationism. You're listening to Here and Now. And they're off. Within the next 24 hours, first-time and well-seasoned chefs will be whipping, mashing, pureeing. But there are side dishes beyond the squished butternut and smashed potatoes. Here to offer some more ideas, Here and Now chef and cookbook author Kathy Gunst. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Robin.
I haven't seen you in a while. Good to see you.
Nice to be here.
And we should say you have a new cookbook out. It's called Stonewall Kitchen Harvest, Celebrating the Bounty of the Seasons. And Stonewall Kitchen, that was up in Maine, right?
It still is. It's based in York, Maine, and it's a beautiful company that makes these wonderful jams and jellies and tons of things now.
Well, and tons of things in this book, particularly the seasonal vegetables that we're going to be working with today. What have you brought in?
I brought you my harvest basket. Root vegetables are not intrinsically beautiful. For instance, over there behind that fat carrot is a very knobby, beige, kind of frightening-looking root vegetable.
You know, Kathy, it looks like a character out of a Steven Spielberg
movie. Exactly, an eyeball from one of those single-eyed creatures. That is the celeriac, or celery root. It's like a cross between parsley and celery.
Right.
And this is a root vegetable. And what you also have in front of you is a soup I made from that. I pureed celery root with fresh ginger and about two other ingredients, and it is extremely naturally creamy and luscious.
Okay, let's tell people. First of all, I've peeled off a little of this ugly brown skin, and sure enough, underneath is a beautiful...
A smooth, beige skin, and you can smell that celery really permeates.
Yeah, it's great.
Now, it's related, but it is not the root that grows under celery stalks. This is a separate root vegetable, and it's one of many. I have a whole chapter in the book called In the Root Cellar, and it's devoted to some of these ugly things in here. We have parsnips and turnips and rutabagas. And these are the kind of things people are going to be pulling out tomorrow for Thanksgiving. They're going to mash them and puree them, as you said, but there are so many other things.
I love this purple one. What's this?
That's a purple top turnip, and that makes a wonderful addition to mashed potatoes, by the way. Just to peel one and throw it in with your potatoes when you're boiling them and mash them, and will add a real earthiness. Try the soup, though. I want you to see what celeriac can do. It has a depth of flavor that's surprising.
It does, but I'm also, you said that this is naturally creamy?
That's right. It is such a very earthy, smooth root vegetable that when you puree it, it becomes naturally creamy. Now, root vegetables, of course, are a great way for Thanksgiving to add a lot of flavor without a lot of fat. That huge parsnip, which...
I just took this thing out of the basket, which it looks like a big,
long Pinocchio
nose.
After a big lie.
There you go. Okay.
Now, that parsnip would be so spectacular, cut into slices and roasted around your turkey just for the last hour. What all these root vegetables have in common is an earthiness, but also very naturally interesting flavors because they've grown underground, and most of these have just been picked. And you think, oh, we can't still be harvesting vegetables. But in fact, in my garden in Maine, I still have leeks and beets and carrots, and they just keep getting sweeter the colder it gets. The beet is another one. I have yellow beets here and regular red beets.
I see that.
What I like to do with these beets is I throw them in tin foil and put them in a 400-degree oven for an hour and come back. They are sweet, delicious. You don't even need to add butter.
You don't sugar them or butter them?
You don't have to do anything to them. You can just slice them. But what I love to do is make a salad with some glazed walnuts and oil and vinegar and chives. That would be a beautiful salad for Thanksgiving.
And the rutabaga, which is, it looks like a big old, it looks like a huge onion or a small grapefruit.
And the odd thing about them, too, is that they're coated in wax to preserve them through the whole winter, which makes an ugly thing even less appealing. But again, inside all that ugly skin is a very sweet and interesting flavored vegetable, and that also is delicious paired with potatoes, either thinly sliced and gratined, which would mean you take thin slices of rutabaga and potato and turnip and alternate them in a gratin dish or a broiler pan, pour a little bit of milk on it and a dotting of butter and some fresh thyme and maybe some grated Parmesan cheese and come back in an hour. That's it. That would be the most beautiful root vegetable gratin.
Kelly Gunst, do you get a lot of invitations to come to people's houses on Thanksgiving Day?
Of
with the
course
hopes
not.
That you would bring a dish
no,
or two?
No, they all want to come to me, that's which right. I love. It's a great meal, and I love sitting there basting my turkey knowing that all over America cooks are doing the exact same thing at the exact same moment. It's a feeling of culinary harmony with America.
Most of them aren't doing it quite as well. Kathy Gunst, thanks so much.
Thanks, Robin.
Kathy's co-author of the new cookbook, Stonewall Kitchen Harvest, Celebrating the Bounty of the Seasons. For more information and some recipes, go to our website, here-now.org. Stay with us. More ahead, Here and Now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now with some of your thoughts. A lot of you wrote after yesterday's segment on the battle between creationists, who believe God created man whole, as told in the Bible, and evolutionists, who say man evolved. We spoke about ongoing court cases over school textbooks, and we talked with Tom Vail, author of a book sold at federally funded bookstores, which presents the creationist view that the Grand Canyon was created a mere few thousand years ago. Well, Steve Geller of Berwick, Maine, represented those who felt we shouldn't have had a creationist on at all. He writes, "Why stop there? Why wouldn't we give equal access to proponents of a flat earth or the superiority of the Aryan race? Our commitment as thinking Americans to accept the right of all individuals to hold whatever beliefs they wish must be accompanied by the obligation to separate fact from fantasy. The alternative is a return to the Dark Ages." Well, many of you thought the segment raised good questions and sparked your own. Sam Backman of Akron, Pennsylvania, a geologist, asked, "If evolution is forced to be removed from books and creation taught, then which form of creation? Every culture has a differing creation myth. And those arguing that God created the world in 6 days should look at the original language. The word translated from Genesis actually means period of time. So who actually knows what the period of time was?" Well, Lane Lambert of Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts, represented many listeners who objected to what they saw as creationists co-opting God.
As a liberal Christian and as a Southerner who grew up Southern Baptist, I might add, I just get very frustrated, particularly that they would have anyone believe that that's the only way that you can follow the faith and, you know, in the Bible.
Well, as a matter of fact, according to the most recent Gallup poll, which was this past November, 45% of respondents agreed with the creationist theory that God created man in his present form within the last 6 to 10,000 years or so. 51% of the respondents believed in evolution, but of those, 38% believed that God was guiding the evolution process. And Lane, you wrote us that many spiritual people such as yourself don't have a problem embracing the grandeur of evolution and the Big Bang as part of an equally devout faith.
Absolutely. God gave us brains for thinking as well as for believing.
The dialogue continues. As always, we love to hear from you about anything on the program. Send us an email at letters@here-now.org. That's letters@here-now.org. Well, SpongeBob SquarePants will make his debut, along with the Beatles' archenemy, the Blue Meanie, in tomorrow's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. The forecasted wind could be a concern, but the rainy weather won't dampen the spirits of the participants, including our next guest, Robert Grippo. He has a new book on the history of the parade, and he joins us from the recording studios at Carnegie Hall. Bob, growing up, I envied friends who devoted their Thanksgiving to the parade because their parents worked at the store. What was your earliest memory?
The first memories I have would be Underdog. He is my favorite balloon to this day. I was a big fan of the cartoon show. So that's the first memory that I have is the Underdog balloon.
Now, let me recall Underdog. He's the one horizontal, right? He's flying.
He basically looked like he would be flying down the streets of Manhattan.
Well, let's do the lightning round here. Let's learn a little bit more about putting this parade on. We understand the first one in 1924 was actually called the Macy's Christmas Day Parade, but it did take place on Thanksgiving Day.
Yes.
The floats were once pulled by horses.
Yes. Then it proceeded to go by tractor at one point, you know, after the horses were considered, I guess, you know, a little bit antiquated.
Well, then also in 1928, I'm reading, there was the first release of these huge balloons into the air at the end of the parade, where they promptly exploded after reaching a certain altitude?
Yes, because people didn't realize once the helium got to a certain point, I guess the pressure in the balloons would just pop.
How awful to see, Mickey Mouse or Underdog, kaboom. They were all redesigned and then re-released, and I loved this idea that the next time they were released, they had a return address label, and Macy's offered a prize for the return?
Yeah, they would drift down, and someone would find them somewhere and return the little tag and get a prize. Or first it was money, and then later on it would be merchandise at Macy's.
I'm looking at the original sketches for Bullwinkle. There's Popeye. Can you try to describe what is it about these big, fat balloons? There's something majestic about them.
Well, you know what it is? I think they represent the characters beautifully, first of all. The children get a chance to see a Mickey Mouse balloon, 65 feet, 70 feet tall. And it just brings to life the character.
Yes, but big has been a problem. We should mention that one woman was seriously injured along the parade route a few years ago when strong winds blew the Cat in the Hat into a light post and then it fell on her. The city formed a commission. Now balloons can't soar in winds over 23 miles an hour or gusts over 34.
Yeah, you know what? That was 1997. The one thing I can say, okay, is that being a participant the last three years, and I'm going to be in the parade tomorrow again as a clown, Macy's really, safety is the most important thing to them. I mean, the funny thing is, if you go back to the history, people used to watch and, watch this thing, it's going into the building, it's swaying, watch out, But it was never a fear of these balloons. From me as a spectator, all those years watching the parade, being in the parade.
Bob, what's that like to be in the parade?
It's just unbelievable feeling. For 2 or 3 hours that morning, there's such an excitement in the air in New York City. I get down to the hotel where they do the makeups for the clowns and everything. You get down there, and it's just, they start 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning getting there. And it's just an excitement. People are talking. People are saying, what balloon are you going to be handling? Because there's balloon handlers in line, And it's just amazing. You hear the stories like, we were bussed in from New Hampshire this morning, to get down here in time, And you bust right up to the parade route. And the clowns have, Clown Corner, right by the Museum of Natural History up there. And in the clown groups, you basically wait until you're told to enter the parade. You just start.
So the groups have different names?
Yeah. Like tomorrow, I'm in the Funny Farm Produce Truck Clowns. Yeah. Last year, I was kind of worried that, when I was told I was in the Funny Farm Produce Truck, I'm saying, oh, no, I don't want to be a 6-foot-tall banana walking down the street just like a banana. That's one thing. I don't know about that.
Well, what were you?
Luckily, I was a farmer. I had overalls. I had a flannel shirt, straw hat, and a yellow wig,
And what are you going to be this year?
I don't know. I mean, I'm in that group again. I'm hoping I don't have to be a banana or an ear or corn or a pumpkin. It's so much fun. I mean, because once you're in the parade, you basically run down the street, okay? And you have to go from side to side of the street. You see the crowds, and you go over, and the kids want high fives, so you give them high fives. And last year, there was this lady. She was up there in years. I don't know how old she was, but I went over to her, and I just shook her hand, and I said, Happy Thanksgiving. She grabbed me over the barricade, and she just gave me a hug. And she said, that means so much to me. Thank you. You made my day today. So, think about that, it's just so much happiness that for those 2 hours, and everybody enjoys it.
Bob Grippo, you're sort of a Macy's Day Parade groupie.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've come full circle, sort of the fulfillment of a childhood dream, from sitting in front of the TV watching Underdog to running around under Underdog.
Yeah, that's right. I guess it was an actual progression. I just used to save articles and clippings, and I just put them aside, and all of a sudden, I'm in the parade.
Robert Grippo is co-author of the book Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robert. I enjoyed talking with you.
And when you watch the parade tomorrow, look closely at that ear of corn. It could be Bob.
I see crowds. I hear yells. There's a parade in town. I hear drums.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston. I'm Robin Young. Get into your radio and join us again. Here and Now.
I see markets. marchers marching, tossing hats at the sky. Did you hear? Did you see? Is a parade in town? Are there drums?
For a cassette or CD of Here and Now, go to our website, here-now.org, or call 1-800-909-9287. Cassettes or CDs are $15 each, which includes shipping and handling.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, on the web at mathworks.com.